You're listening to CLNS Media, powered by Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
Sensational move from Kyrie Irving. Oh, Hayward.
That's what I'm talking about.
Horford lays it up and in.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll free 347-215-7771.
All right. Was anybody surprised? Really? Is anyone surprised right now? Does anybody feel like they didn't get what they expected? Or, I mean, maybe people over in Indiana. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Matt Rury. You are listening to the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. I am joined here today by Nick Sesento, and we are going to tell you about Game 4 in the first round series between the Boston Celtics and the Indiana Pacers, in which the Celtics won 110-106. And quite honestly, that score is not indicative of the way the last, let's call it 15 minutes of this game went. Because you know what, Nick? Much like the Celtics season, much like every game during their season, pretty much every game during this series, they did not play strong 48 minutes, but they played strong when it counted, and they found a way to win today. And the score only winning by 4 points. Indiana tried to extend things towards the end. That has something to do with it. But the Celtics had a firm grasp on this game, in my opinion, going into the fourth quarter, even though they only led by a point or two.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, I mean, it was a very well-rounded effort from this Boston Celtics team to close out this game 110-106. I mean, Kyrie Irving, only 14 points, 7 assists on 4 for 13 shooting. You'd think maybe the Celtics might be in trouble. But as I've been saying, maybe not all series long, but at least since the win in Game 2, that Game 2 was the best punch the Indiana Pacers had to offer the Boston Celtics. Kyrie Irving went into, you know, savage mode and basically took that game and put it on his shoulders and won that game for the Boston Celtics. And I don't think the Pacers had anything left. I know Game 3 was slightly competitive for a little while, and this game was fairly competitive for most of the game until, like you said, within the last 12 minutes. But this series is over after that Game 2 loss where the Pacers were really, you know, they had a chance there. And Kyrie Irving went into playoff mode, and that's it. And just real quick, looking at the last few possessions prior to the, you know, garbage time, let's get the score a little bit closer with free throws. The Celtics possessions, Marcus Morris for a three. Gordon Hayward gets the ball, backs it up, drives to the hoop, basket and one. Gordon Hayward,
what
same situation,
play
gets
that
the ball.
Was. Holy crap. That was a very encouraging play. The Hayward
encouraging
play.
Oh,
encouraging.
Definitely.
Because he saw, immediately he saw the mismatch and he said, oh, well, I'm going to back
I'm
this
taking
up
it right
all the
back.
Way. I'm going to blow right by him. I can beat this guy. And he did.
Yeah, and it's crazy because you don't think that Gordon Hayward has, you know, when you watch his game, and I've often said, you know, he has, like, old man game. It's kind of like, you know, he beats you on angles. He'll beat you on, you know, positioning. He'll beat you in certain ways, but not really with his speed. But it's deceptive in some ways. He brought that ball, I mean, within maybe about 5 feet from the half-court line and then basically just gave, you know, his little hezzies and stuff right at the three-point line and got right past his defender. Who was defending him on? Was it Evans? And just went right by, got the and one for the three-point play. And then the next offensive play for the Celtics right after that, I don't know if it was the same defender, but it was the same situation. Gordon Hayward gets the ball. He dribbles off his foot for a second, collects it somewhere, you know, within about 5-8 feet from the half-court line, mid-court line.
Yep.
You know, the defender's giving him all that space because he doesn't want to get blown by again. Gordon Hayward, swish for three. Gordon Hayward gets the game ball for me, obviously. And then, of course, you have Kyrie with that crazy behind-the-back save, which resulted in a Marcus Morris three, and then Gordon Hayward with another three. Then you had the garbage time at the end. I mean, those were some when the Boston Celtics wanted to put on the pressure, they put on the pressure and they got it done. Sweep. I was ready to try to spin this in a positive way if there was a loss. Like, oh, well, it's an extra couple of days for Marcus Smart to get rested
up.
It
doesn't matter. He'll get him anyway. He'll get him anyway.
Right.
Because, I mean, and we'll get into the next round in a few minutes, probably about halfway through the show at least, to talk about what's going to happen next year for the Celtics. But Marcus Smart being injured and having time is definitely something that would be important to the team. And I think that he's going to get that time over the next few days anyway, before they start the next round. But we'll have to wait and see what happens in Detroit tomorrow night. I assume Milwaukee will sweep, and we can get into that a little bit later. But the funny thing is, I mean, Gordon Hayward definitely led the way, and Marcus Morris followed suit. And guess what? Terry Rozier, solid game in just 18 or 19 minutes off the bench. The scoring from those guys really, to me, is the reason the Celtics won this game, because the starters really struggled from the floor entirely. Pretty much every single player in the starting lineup, aside from Jaylen Brown, who had a pretty good game, struggled from the floor. But if you're looking at the players that you would consider, especially just take a look at those five. Who are the five best players in the Celtics starting lineup? It's Kyrie, it's Al Horford, it's Jason Tatum, right? Three out of the best five. And those three guys, when a combined 12 for, what is this? That's almost 30, 40, 42? 12 for 42? 4 of 10 for Tatum, 4 of 19 for Horford. Horrible shooting game for him. It's a good thing he did it pretty much everything else. And then Kyrie, 4 of 13, not great. Those guys are the reason this game was so close for the first three quarters. And in the fourth quarter, the Celtics found a way to really clamp down and make great defensive plays, turn it into offense, and they pulled away from this game. But if one of those three guys had a better shooting night, the Celtics would have won this one going away. And it's because Hayward and Morris and Rozier really stepped up off the bench. So to me, Nick, going forward, if the Celtics are going to win series and they're going to beat teams that have better number one players, if you're looking at Giannis Antetokounmpo, if you're looking further down the line to Kawhi Leonard and you think that he's the best player in a series that the Celtics play, and then if you look at the finals and pick number one player on Western Conference team, there's definitely an argument that he, whoever that is better than Kyrie Irving. But when you look at 2 through 8 or 3 through 7, whatever, however you want to cut it, the Celtics are going to come out better. They have better players after Kyrie than every other team that they might end up facing going forward. So basically, what I'm trying to say is Kyrie is a superstar. He has to do superstar type of things for them to win. The advantage comes for them when everybody else is playing at the top of their game, because that's just going to make the whole roster better than the team they're facing. And if that's the case, I like their chances. So the role players are going to play a huge part of any success that they may have over the next few weeks.
Well, they have to. 49 points off the bench for the Boston Celtics, I mean, that's not quite half their point production, but, I mean, that's significant. And that all came from those three players you just mentioned earlier. Gordon Hayward leading the way, leading all scores for the Celtics. I'm not sure if he let all – nope, there was a couple of players. Tyreek Evans had 21 and Bogdanovich had 22. But leading all players for the Celtics with 20 points, Gordon Hayward, Marcus Morris with another Marcus Morris game. And I remember in some of the pregame shows prior to the postseason, what's Brad Stevens going to do with his rotations? Who's going to be that eighth man in the rotation? And we as the people that were on the postgame that night, I don't know if I was calling in or hosting, but, you know, debating, is it going to be Terry Rozier as the eighth man, you know, kind of the spot minute man? Is it going to be Marcus Morris? Who is it going to be? And I believe that we came to the conclusion that, you know, Marcus Morris is probably going to be the guy that got a lot of those minutes. He's developed trust with Brad Stevens. He's close friends personally with Kyrie Irving. And I believe I said each one of them, if they have a protracted run in these playoffs, each one of those guys, whether it's Terry Rozier, whether it's Marcus Morris, whether it's Gordon Hayward, they're going to have a Marcus Morris, Gordon Hayward, or Terry Rozier game. Marcus Morris has had two Marcus Morris games already in this playoffs. He's had two fantastic games. I believe game one, he really anchored the offense, and then in this game, he really, you know, came up with very timely baskets, and, you know, playing that kind of – I just like seeing Marcus Morris come onto the floor, because you need somebody that's going to go out there and look ugly. His game isn't ugly, and I don't think he's an ugly man, you know, nothing else aside, but he makes ugly faces. Remember how we loved Perk when he always used to make that scowling face? And you just need a guy like Marcus Morris that's willing to do something crazy on the court and scream at somebody in their face like last year in the playoffs. That just, you know, you need that guy. And he's another veteran leader that can go out there with Al Horford or with Kyrie Irving or even with, you know, Gordon Hayward and can feel the game. Some of these younger players don't yet have that, you know, that sixth sense to feel the flow of the game and feel when things are necessary. And I think Marcus Morris does. He doesn't always take the most best advised shots, but he often hits some of those ill-advised shots, and he frequently hits well-timed shots. So a lot of credit also to Marcus Morris and this Boston Celtics bench. And that's what this team is built for. It's built for interchangeability, versatility in offense and defense, and it's built with depth to withstand the attrition that we see in the NBA these days with players getting injured, you know, late in the season. We saw Marcus Smart go down, and who was there to fill in the spot? Jaylen Brown. And, you know, if Jaylen Brown, God forbid something happened, Terry Rozier would be able to play more than the 18 or 19 minutes. That's what the Boston Celtics are made for. And you're right, Kyrie Irving may be a close, you know, second or third behind Giannis Antetokounmpo, who is my MVP this season. I don't know if they've actually picked MVPs. I sure as hell hope it's not James Harden. But, you know, I would say it's Antetokounmpo, maybe Kawhi, and then it's, you know, Kyrie has to be somewhere in the top five. And then after that, you look at their role players, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Al Horford. They're with the sheer number of them, and any one of them, Marcus Morris, any one of them, that Gordon Hayward, any one of them that can go off on any given night and carry the offense, that's all the difference in the world. And I think that is as well put together as the Milwaukee Bucks are as a team. Same thing with the Toronto Raptors. I just put my money on the Celtics on that. I mean, I put my money on the Celtics all the way through to the, you know, Eastern Conference Finals. The way they're playing now.
There's something to be said about them building momentum, and I was complaining a month or two ago that they were waiting too long to try and find that momentum. Marcus Morris was vocal about it in the media, saying that you can't just flip a switch. You do need to have some time period where you ramp things up gradually and get to a point where you're playing your best basketball. And I would have to say that even though the scores don't necessarily – listen, no, I'm not talking about the switch. I'm saying even though the scores don't dictate it, I think the Celtics have gradually, over this series, the last four games, gotten better. I think game one was abysmal both ways. I think game two was a little bit better, and then they found a way to overcome some things and close it out. Game three was, again, better for the Celtics, and the Pacers kind of just looked like they couldn't make a shot. They just can't keep up, right? And they just – the Celtics kind of seem to be honing their stuff and getting better as time goes on. So then today, you're watching them sort of mess around, but you have that feeling that they have control of the game, even though they're down seven or they're up one, or then the runs, the 8-0 run to start the game, and then they give up a 13-0 run right back to be down five.
Yep.
You just felt like every time Indiana gave them a punch, they were going to fight back and that they were going to find a way to close this thing out. And I think that's mainly because of the talent at the top. Kyrie, Al Horford, they've been there before. Kyrie's won a championship. Horford's still looking for one. But, I mean, that type of player on the floor for the Celtics is going to win out against the Pacers team every time. So even though that they were down relatively big at times in this game, you knew, I felt anyway, that they were going to win. I was totally confident that they were going to win this game today throughout. There was no point where I thought that they were going to lose this thing. And to me, that's better than the first three games in this series. So if they're going to just get better every game, then that's maybe this is the time that they've decided to start ramping it up and getting into that groove that Marcus Morris talked about and that I was begging for 2 months. And that's the thing, Nick, with Kyrie Irving that you have to take when he's your number one player, I guess. If he can bring you to the finals and potentially win a championship, then everything that happened during the regular season, nobody's going to care about, right?
Nope. And especially when you hit those shots like, unfortunately, I mean, well, fortunately or unfortunately, it doesn't matter to me. I'm a Celtics fan, so who wins otherwise doesn't really matter to me. But he did hit that shot in the finals when the Cleveland Cavaliers beat the odds-on favorite, the stacked Golden State Warriors, and he did. He was the one that hit that three. There was the block, and there were other, you know, plays that went along with it. But Kyrie Irving, and then just some of the moves. I mean, the guy is just as slippery as a player as I've ever seen, and I've loved a lot of, you know, being a someone that never grew past 6 feet. I'm only 5'9". Being a guy that's always looked at smaller players and how they play, guys like Chris Jackson, guys like Stacey Adams when I was a real little kid, you know, guys that know how to get to the bat. Rod Strickland, and Kyrie Irving is just as, you know, slippery as any player you've seen, any small player, any big player, any player that you've seen.
All right,
and
so
it's amazing the things that he can do and being able to put the team on his shoulder. He's mercurial. He doesn't always say the best things in the media, and that's been one of my biggest gripes because I think some of those things that fester in the media can then infect the locker room. But I think that Kyrie Irving is doing and saying and the right things at the right time, and that includes a lot of the intangible things, like sometimes occasionally playing a back seat. I mean, I don't think he broke 20 points in the past couple of games, but he's been facilitating other players. He's been there when he needs to be, and he's learned how to ride the hot hand when he sees somebody else like Jason Tatum in, I believe it was, game two, although I know Kyrie had his beast mode game in that game, but, you know, Jason Tatum was hot, he got Jason Tatum the ball. Jaylen Brown, he was hot in game three, got Jaylen Brown the ball. Marcus Morris in game one, got Marcus Morris the ball. Kyrie Irving is learning how to, you know, let these things kind of, you know, come to him, as opposed to, I'm going to put this on my shoulders every single time, because that's not always what's needed. And I'm going to close my little rant here. I quote this frequently. Shaquille O'Neal said, and I believe it was in reference to Kyrie Irving and the Kyrie Irving situation and his relationship with the young players. And Shaquille O'Neal said one of the best things he ever learned in his career was to let the young guns, and by that he meant, you know, Kobe Bryant and then later in his career Dwayne Wade, let the young guns take over, because it just made his job easier. And I think Kyrie Irving is coming to that conclusion himself.
Yeah, and you have to, especially if you want to have – if Kyrie really wants to stay here next year and beyond, he needs to start letting these guys take their own shots and be the guys that close games out, because – like you said, it will make his job a lot easier going forward. If he wants to leave, then maybe he's just doing the right thing and he's being a professional in the place that he is right now. But something about the way he plays, just in the last four games, listen, playoff Kyrie, we've all heard the myth about it or whatever, the legend of playoff Kyrie. It's not necessarily a myth yet. We'll wait and see over the next couple of weeks. But he seems to have brought the pain right here in the first round. So I like what I see from Kyrie Irving. He looks like he's locked in. And to me, whether he's just trying to help these guys because he's here now, or whether he's looking forward to the future and saying, I got to groom these guys right now because I'm going to be playing with them for the next 5 years. Whatever his goal is, it doesn't matter because he's playing better and he's showing them what it takes to win in the playoffs. I like what I see. I think it's just by the eye test, it looks like a different attitude from pretty much everybody on the team. And I hope it continues next round and that we can watch them go on the run that everyone expected them to go on back in October when this season started. All right. I'm going to open up the call lines here. 347-215-7771. They are toll free and brought to you by betonline.ag. So if you want to give us a call, you can do that. Again, 347-215-7771. Do me a favor and hit the one button there. Just press that one so we get that notification that you actually want to come on the air. And, of course, betonline.ag is pretty awesome. You should go check it out if you haven't yet. You can go to clnsmedia.com/win and use the promo code CLNS50 to get 50% back on your first deposit. So that's kind of a big deal. If you're going to throw 10 bucks in there, they're going to give you $5 back. So, I mean, it's half price. Go use it. Use the code. CLNSmedia.com/win, promo code CLNS50. So we'll see if anybody feels like coming on the air with us, Nick. It's been pretty light for the Celtics post-game show here on CLNS Media over the first round series. But we are here until 4:30 with you, Eastern Standard Time. And we're going to be talking about Celtics and Bucks because that's who we assume they're going to see coming up in the next round. To just kind of piggyback on the point that we were just talking about with Kyrie and building for the future or not, who cares at this point? If he's going to play this well, then I think they have a really good chance of making a lot more noise than everybody thought coming down the stretch here. And I was nervous for a while too, so I'm not trying to toot my own horn or trying to justify myself or something like that. But I feel like the negativity was getting pretty strong for a little while, and there's not much that anybody can say right now. Because you know what would have happened had they lost one of those games in Indiana and they came home and even won in five? People would have been talking, they should have swept, they should have done this, they should have done that. I don't know, Nick. You tell me. There's not a whole lot that you can take out of this series and complain about as far as the Celtics are concerned. I just don't see it.
Can you ever complain about a sweep? It was funny, as I was looking at, you know, pulling up the stuff on this old slow Windows computer that crashes on me every single time I use it, I pulled up the ESPN page to get the box score for the game, and as I was pulling it up, there was a video. It was one of those Kobe Bryant, you know, breakdowns of certain plays or whatever, and it was like a mistake that Kyrie Irving made, and the first thought in my head was, they're up 3-0. I mean, like, who can, why is the first thing that I see when I pull up, you know, the Celtics, you know, game on ESPN or the Celtics stats on ESPN is a video about a mistake that Kyrie made? I mean, like, can we give them some credit for a change? But it was actually a pretty informative video. I like those things that those videos that I forgot what they're called, but those videos that Kobe does. I like Kobe as an analyst far more than Kyrie. But it just mentioned how Kyrie got stuck inside in the paint, you know, amongst the trees and basically ineffective on a rebounding situation that ultimately led to a breakaway for the Indiana Pacers, I believe, in either game two or game three. But there's nothing to complain about. They asked me after game three, what could I complain about? And I said, well, maybe that 18-point second quarter, you could, you know, they went up big, 41 points, which is almost half their point total from game one in the first quarter alone. And then in that second quarter, kind of got complacent, and that complacency kind of can spread from, you know, the defense and then to the offense, because once you stop getting defensive stops, once the defensive stops aren't coming, then you start valuing your offensive possessions more. When you see another team coming back, and then that confidence that you had, everything was going in that first quarter, now you have to make up for it. Now it's not as easy, and now the confidence isn't quite there. Now you're in a game, and it's not the same feeling that you had in that first quarter. So I think there are situations where against a better team with the bona fide, you know, superstar like, you know, Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Boston Celtics are going to have to learn to keep their foot on the neck of another team. If they have 41-point quarters against the Milwaukee Bucks, they better not let it get close after that, because the Milwaukee Bucks are going to have the ability, unlike the Indiana Pacers, to sustain a, you know, prolonged run and then hold off the Boston Celtics for the win. So that would be my only concern, is that there's still a little bit of complacency, still a little bit of lack of urgency. Maybe that comes entirely from the fact that they're playing, you know, the Indiana Pacers, but they can't lose that urgency against the Milwaukee Bucks. Although I was glad to see Paul Pierce with the broom on TNT pregame or whatever game it was, the ABC pregame.
ABC,
he was literally sweeping papers off the desk. I guess it must have been ABC. Michelle Beadle's papers off the desk. And you know, there's a little bit of a rivalry between Jalen Rose and Paul Pierce, especially after Paul Pierce said he was better than Dwayne Wade, and Jalen Rose started reading off individual accomplishments by each player, trying to make Paul Pierce, you know, look bad. But we all know Paul Pierce is a better player than Dwayne Wade. But Paul Pierce had some extra petty in those little broom sweeps. So can't complain about anything.
No, I'm not complaining either. And, I mean, I guess the complacency that you mentioned is one thing I'm sure that people could pick out and say, if they play like that, they're not going to get past Milwaukee, blah, blah, blah. But you know what? I'm hoping that they are reading the opponent and they realize that they could play a little bit light sometimes against Indiana, and they're just trying to sort of feel themselves out. I'm not trying to say that feeling cocky and playing that way is a good thing, because karma can come and bite you. But I feel like the Celtics know where they're at. They're buying into Kyrie's mentality that you will go far because he's there, and they're just along for the ride and trying to play their best basketball. And somehow they can find a way to focus in with that mentality. And maybe it's just because they're so relaxed and they don't get uptight. They're a bunch of young guys that are playing in the moment and not like getting over their heads. You know, they feel very cool, collected. Tatum's been this way his whole career so far. Jaylen Brown has been a little flustered at times over the first couple of years, but this year he seems to be locked in as far as his focus is concerned. And I mean, Al Horford is the quiet assassin out there. We all know what he brings. So I feel like they found a way to take all this talent finally. And I mean, I'm almost feeling like Phil Jackson, Zen master type of stuff is going on here with Kyrie Irving, where he has brought them to a spot where they're all feeling good. And even though it didn't really look that great during the regular season, they're here and they're ready to go. And they're still just as good as any team in the East. And they have a chance to go to the NBA Finals. And maybe people will listen to me right now and say that I'm getting ahead of myself because they still haven't gone up against Giannis and the Bucks and all this stuff. But in just a couple minutes, we're going to get into that. And I'm going to tell you why I think the Celtics actually might have an advantage in this series. So, Nick, let's take a quick break to hear from our wonderful sponsor. And then we'll come back and talk about the Bucks, because that's very likely who the Celtics are going to be seeing in just a few days in round two. We'll be right back on the Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media.
Today's episode is powered by betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/win and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive 50% cash back on your first deposit. That's betonline.ag. Go to clnsmedia.com/win and use the promo code CLNS50 to receive 50% cash back on your first deposit.
When it's time to make a hire for your small business, of course you want to find the best person for that job. Well, the odds are that person is on LinkedIn. LinkedIn Jobs makes it easy to get matched with quality candidates who make the most sense for your role. People come to LinkedIn every day to learn and advance their careers, so LinkedIn understands what they're interested in and what they're looking for, which means when you use LinkedIn Jobs to hire someone, your matches are based on so much more than a resume. LinkedIn goes further. They include skills and background, interests, activities, and passions. This way, you'll get the most relevant and qualified candidate early on in the process, and you can spend more time on candidates you're excited about. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in developing quality hires. So listen up. Post a job today at linkedin.com/garden and get $50 off your first job post. That's linkedin.com/garden. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is...
You ever been in a ball fight?
Celtics postgame show on CLNS Media. I was waiting for that thing to play. And here we are. My name is Matt Rory. I'm here with Nick Sesento. Celtics win 110-106. They complete the sweep in round one against the Indiana Pacers. Tomorrow night, their likely second-round opponent will take on the Detroit Pistons in Detroit. Blake Griffin is back. I assume he's going to play again. Nick, do the Pistons have a shot at extending this series to 5 games against the Bucks? Because there's no way it goes past that.
No, it's over. And I was just going on to basketballreference.com and looking at the playoff stats for each team, comparing the playoff stats for the Celtics and the Bucks. And the Bucks, I just don't see it. Even when Blake Griffin was playing, in the first game or whatever, I mean, it was like a 40-point blowout. So, yeah, so there's There's no chance. I don't see the Milwaukee Bucks. I think the Milwaukee Bucks are rolling along just like the Celtics are right now. I think they're in a groove. I think they found themselves. I think they feel comfortable. And if you give me 2 seconds to walk back to my little iPad that actually doesn't crash like the Windows product, I'll give you a little bit of some stats from the Milwaukee Bucks that I think are interesting. The Milwaukee Bucks have, let's see, there's a playoff per game. They have two players that are averaging in 20 points or more per game. Of course, one is Giannis Antetokounmpo, and he's averaging 21 points and 13 rebounds. However, he's only playing 27 minutes a game because he doesn't have to play more than that. So he's basically just getting vanity stats at this point. Then you have Eric Bledsoe scoring nearly 20.5 points per game in nearly 28 minutes. And then nearly 20 points from Chris Middleton. He's scoring 19.5 points. As compared to the Boston Celtics, who only have two players that are in 20-point range or near that, Kyrie Irving being one, 25.5 points, and then Tatum just 0.3 points under 20 points per game. So there's a lot of stuff to work with, a lot of players that the Boston Celtics are going to have to account for when playing the Milwaukee Bucks. But I think a lot of those stats, even though you see the low minutes rate for a lot of their main players, I think and those stats are still very inflated, in my opinion, based on the opponent that they're playing. That they're able to, if Giannis in 27 minutes per game is able to put up 21 points and 10 rebounds, that's just Drew Bledsoe, Eric Bledsoe. I almost made the same mistake as Scary Terry. Hopefully, Scary Terry comes back.
You should call him Drew Bledsoe.
Drew Bledsoe. And Drew Bledsoe averaging, nearly 20.5 points.
Not going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen, especially not with Scary Terry. I think Scary Terry's been kind of dormant slightly. He's played his role fairly well, I'll say. I'll give him, a C+, B- in the role that he's been playing. Today was a better game than some of the other ones. He's been effective in certain ways that don't always show up in the stat sheet. But if there's one thing that I think can get Scary Terry to get Terry Rozier III to bring out Scary Terry again, will be seeing his old friend Drew, quote-unquote,
yep,
Eric Bledsoe, and crossing him over, knocking him down, and draining threes in his face. So that'll be fun to watch. A lot of matchups to watch. I think this is a good rivalry, much more entertaining a rivalry than the Philadelphia 76ers, who I no longer consider a Boston Celtics rival until they can actually win something more than that one bogus game they won this season against the Celtics.
Right. And so when you're talking about the Bucks here, and you're looking at stats for the first three games, et cetera, and you said it. Most of it is garbage time because they get up 20, and then the bench comes in, and, I mean, you're seeing Ilyasova score a bunch of points. Sorry, not a bunch of points, but he's scoring a few buckets. You're seeing Pat Connaughton score 11 points a game. Pat Connaughton played basketball with my younger brother in Arlington, Massachusetts. Okay?
Wow.
This is not a knock on Pat Connaughton, but when he scored 11 points a game in an NBA playoff series, there's something up with the opponent. I mean, so when you're looking at the top three guys, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Eric Bledsoe, Chris Middleton, those are guys that are concerning for sure. Giannis obviously stands out as one of the best players in the league, if not the MVP. He's right up there. Bledsoe, I'm not buying into Bledsoe. And the reason for that is, who does Detroit have to guard this guy? Who's playing defense on Bledsoe right now? Reggie Jackson, Ish Smith? I mean, they might as well roll Jose Calderon out there. He hasn't taken a shot all series in the first. He played two games. He hasn't taken a single shot. He's got a couple of assists. That's about it. But nobody can guard Eric Bledsoe on this team. Kyrie Irving, Terry Rozier, Marcus Smart, maybe towards the end of the series. We'll see if he comes back. He probably won't be healthy. But even 75% Marcus Smart is going to guard Bledsoe better than anybody on the Detroit Pistons. So that's what I attribute his point fluctuation to, scoring 20 points a game. That's not going to happen against the Celtics. I would be shocked in let's call it a 7-game series. I would be shocked if Bledsoe averaged more than 12 points a game. And that's a little bit high. If I was a real betting man, I'd probably put the line at 10 because I think he's going to get shut down. Giannis is a different story, but Nick, this is why I think the Celtics may have an edge here. After Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Celtics, in my opinion, have the best four players in the series on either roster. I like Chris Middleton a lot. I think he's a great player, but I feel like you can shut him down if you close out quick enough on him. So I'm hoping that Danny Ainge pulls out the tape from 10 years ago when LeBron James was by far and away the best player on the floor, and the Boston Celtics still found a way to let him do whatever he needed to do, shut down everybody else, and win games and then the series. Because that seems to me the best approach against a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo. If you can find a way to close out quickly on Middleton and you don't let Mirotić take any shots, he's not scoring that much in this series. You jump out on Brook Lopez, you play physical with these guys, and let Giannis score 50 points a game, I still think that you win this series, because your talent from 3 to 8, like I said earlier, from 2 to 7, however you want to cut it, is better than the other team. And to me, that's important. So that would be my game plan if I was Brad Stevens. But there's a reason that I'm not an NBA coach or a basketball coach at all. There's a reason I'm on these podcasts and not coaching basketball. Maybe I just don't have the drive or something, but I think that obviously they know more than me. But this seems so obvious. Even a guy like you or me could figure this one out. Let him do his thing. Stop everybody else.
Well, now, Rory, as a middle school girls basketball coach, I will have to, you know, assert my authority here. No, I'm just kidding. But I think the Celtics have enough to do both. I think they can throw a little bit at Giannis Antetokounmpo, just enough exotic looks, just enough, you know, switching, just enough to maybe slow him down a little bit. You're not going to stop him, and he's probably going to go for, you know, 25 plus points every single game of the series, possibly. But if you can keep him under those 50 points, like you said, and keep him from going there while at the same time stopping Chris Middleton. And I think Chris Middleton, one of the biggest problems with Chris Middleton, he's heavily reliant on his shot. He has a fantastic three-point shot. He's a fantastic mid-range game. But I don't think that he's as in a lot of ways, he's more polished than Jason Tatum, but in a lot of ways, he's not quite as, I think, versatile or as explosive or dynamic as Jason Tatum can be when Jason Tatum is on. It's just a matter of years with them. But I think there's just the Celtics have enough personnel, enough switchability that they did last season. They had games that they had the Semi Ojeleye game where they really, you know, disrupt. I don't see that, you know, happening again this playoffs. Maybe it will. Maybe Semi, who hasn't played very much at all, if at all.
Hey,
hold on a second.
I think that putting him out there for 10 minutes a game just to push Giannis around a little bit is a great idea. You've got to put him out there with scorers, though. You can't put him out there with a bunch of guys that are going to try and pass the ball. Like, you got to put him out there with guys that are confident in shooting. So throw him in instead of Jaylen Brown for a little while with Kyrie and Horford and Morris and Tatum. I think just anybody that can push Giannis around is going to be great to just throw out there for a few minutes at a time.
And I think he's going to see a lot of players pushing him around. I think you might even, and I know it's an extreme mismatch, but I still don't think that his outside jumper is fantastic or consistent enough that if you flash Baines out there on the odd occasion, you know what I mean, and give him a couple of steps, you know, Baines is going to be a reasonable firewall with Al Horford playing the help defense to close out in the paint if Giannis or when Giannis gets past Baines. But yeah, Semi Ojeleye to put some muscle on him, maybe some. I don't know if Jaylen Brown is quite big enough, and I don't know if Jason Tatum is as good enough a defender to really cause that much difference. If you had Marcus Smart, I think you'd probably maybe flash, but then Marcus Smart's given up at least 8 or 9 inches to Giannis Antetokounmpo and is clearly not as fast, especially not even if he comes back in the series and it goes to 7 games and he's able to come back from maybe the back end of those 7 games. But there's enough exotic looks, and I think that's the thing about the Celtics. And even Al Horford, putting Al Horford on Giannis, I think Al Horford does a pretty decent job on Giannis. And one of the things that was it the Bucks that got Mark Gasol? Or who was it?
Toronto
that got Marc Gasol. So the big for the Bucks.
On the Bucks, you're in a suit.
So Pau Gasol, yeah, wearing a suit. Well, Pau Gasol is like 50 years old. So I mean, I think he's pretty much irrelevant in that situation. I don't know. I mean, who are the bigs for the Bucks? I mean, you know, they have a lot of wing scoring, Chris Middleton, Giannis, and then they have Eric Bledsoe, I think, or Drew Bledsoe, whatever, that plays, you know, the kind of combo guard. They're more of a wing backcourt-oriented team, and I don't know if their bigs are really inside-type bigs to really threaten the Boston Celtics in that kind of way where they can't focus on, you know, perimeter defense to prevent, you know what I'm saying, their wings from driving into the hoop.
Yeah, so Nick, when you're talking about big men on this team, it's Brook Lopez, who is not a rebounder. He's turned into much more of a shooter. He's a three-point shooter at this point in his career. He's getting five rebounds a game, but when you look and see who's actually getting rebounds for this team in the Detroit series, again, Pat Connaughton, I'm shocked. Hometown boy, seven rebounds a game for this kid right now. I haven't been watching any of those games, but apparently he's killing it. And then, of course, Giannis, 13 rebounds a game. So you're looking at those guys. And then as far as big men are concerned, Ilyasova, I mentioned him earlier. He's not been scoring a lot, but he does get six rebounds a game. Chris Middleton, for a guard forward, is rebounding pretty well, six rebounds a game. But overall, I think that they're relying on their efficiency on the offensive end to not have to really rebound. So they don't rebound on the offensive end, and they play pretty good defense, so they're probably forcing a lot of turnovers. Just quickly, Detroit, I wish they would show me. Oh, here we go. Detroit has turned it over 10 times a game. I mean, that's not a lot. So it appears as though Milwaukee is just playing a solid game, but they don't have anyone that sort of dominates on the boards aside from Giannis. Again, it all comes back to Antetokounmpo. It all comes back to their MVP. If you can find a way to slow him down even just a little bit and then stop everyone else, you win the series. People don't trust the Celtics still, and that's the problem. And maybe I'm trusting them too much, you know? But the bottom line to me is if you can slow him down even to 90% of what he normally is and then stop everybody else, you're good. And I think that they have the capability of doing that. Because, like I said earlier, Eric Bledsoe not going to be able to score 20 points a game against the likes of even Rozier and Irving. Forget about if Marcus Smart even comes back or not. It's not going to happen. If you switch Jaylen Brown or Tatum onto him as well, he's not scoring the basketball. The Celtics are much more talented than Detroit and much more talented than the Pacers, as you saw in this series. And I think they're a little bit more talented than Milwaukee. So that's where my confidence comes from. I put the green goggles on a little early this year, Nick. I don't know, but I mean, I'm feeling good.
Well, I think I think you've summed up the situation. Not rebounding on the offensive end reminds me of a coach that we used to have, and I hope we've fixed some of those problems since then, because I think you still have to make some kind of effort on the offensive glass. Second chance points. Watching them through this series, in this series against the Indiana Pacers, I believe the Boston Celtics did better on second chance points, despite having a presence in the paint like Miles Turner, who was excellent, fantastic. I mean, I knew that he was the defensive player of the year, was the leader in the league in blocks, but I didn't know that he was just that effective, because I'd seen Miles Turner play before, and he wasn't as effective a player on either end of the court, or at least not on the defensive end. In this series, he wasn't all that great offensively. But the big comparison between the two teams, each of these two squads that are basically on a collision course to meet up in the semifinals, is the Boston Celtics played a really freaking good defensive team. You know, with or without Victor Oladipo, they played a really good defensive team, and Miles Turner was causing ruckus down there for pretty much every single Celtic player that tried to get into the paint. Whereas the Milwaukee Bucks are playing the Detroit Pistons that really, I mean, who on that team is really a stopper? Who on that team is really an offensive, you know, juggernaut? I know Blake Griffin can, you know, really do things, but he's terrible on defense. You know, who is it? There's nobody really there that's challenging the Milwaukee Bucks. And when I look at some of those stats and the averages the Milwaukee Bucks have, I'm sitting there looking, you see Pat Connaughton and these other guys that you've been mentioning. I think a lot of what you're seeing in Pat Connaughton, 28 minutes, averaging more minutes than nearly 29 minutes a game, averaging more minutes than Giannis, I think it's been such a route for the Milwaukee Bucks against the Detroit Pistons is that they've almost used this series to let's get Eric Bledsoe some looks. Let's run this thing through Eric Bledsoe. Let's run this thing through Pat Connaughton. Let's run this thing through a couple of other guys, and let's get them ready so we can have a little bit of depth to compete with the Boston Celtics' depth in the next round. And, you know, if I give Chris Middleton all the credit, it's really on offense, and I don't see these same stats happening, like you said, like we both agreed. Drew Bledsoe ain't getting, you know, 20 plus points a game against the Boston Celtics, even without Marcus Smart. If it's a, you know, two-man show in that, well, basically a one-and-a-half plus another half-guy show in Giannis and Chris Middleton, if you can, you know, shut everybody else down and force Giannis can't score you, you know, 95 to 100, 105 points a game. He can probably get you maybe 50, you know, on a good night, and he's not going to be able to do that every single night. So if you can hold the rest of that team to, you know, assume Giannis just averages 50 points. If you can hold the rest of the team to 40 points, or more realistically 40 to 50 points, I mean, it's two teams built in two different ways. The Milwaukee Bucks have great chemistry, but the Celtics have great depth.
That's right, and that's what I mean by 2-7, 3-8. Those are the numbers right there. I mean, the 8 is a little strong, obviously, because you're not going to be throwing Daniel Tice out there every single game. I think he got in a few minutes today, right? So he played a little bit, but overall, I mean, he's not really going to get in there, and he's not a guy that I'm really looking to compare anyway. But it's Rozier would be the eighth guy. I guess Tice is more like the ninth guy, right? So when you're looking at Terry Rozier, forget about numbers. Just think about the impact that he has on the game. Mike Gorman said something that I think about often, but I don't really put a lot of stock into because you don't see it really a ton. But consistently, Terry Rozier likes to play defense full court, even if the rest of the Celtics aren't even looking. He's picking up his man full court, and he's not necessarily in their face or playing extremely hard on them, but the way Mike Gorman put it was he makes their life just a little bit more difficult. It's just a little harder. And after 15 minutes of that, it's like, all right, man, I'm tired of this. Stop poking at me. You know, like, it gets agitating. And Terry Rozier, just the way he plays defense sometimes, I think, makes an impact on the game. So when you're looking at him as your eighth best player, I think the Celtics, I mean, right there, have an advantage. And if it comes down to bench play and things like that, which oftentimes it does in the NBA playoffs, the Celtics are going to win out. So you tell me, look at Toronto's bench, look at Milwaukee's bench. Are those guys better than Gordon Hayward, Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier? Because I don't think they are. So that's why I think the Celtics actually have an advantage going forward, because you do need 5, 6, 7, sometimes 8 guys to really step up and play well. And if you need all 8 guys, then I'm putting my money on the Celtics.
And especially when nearly all of those 8 guys, I think we can exclude Aaron Baines from that, you know, equation. He's not there to score anyway. He's just there to be, you know, a big, rugged, thick guy that apparently impresses Tommy Heinsohn in the locker room. He's not there to score points. But with those other 7 guys, I mean, every single one of them, even down to Terry Rozier, can, you know, affect the game, can take over a game, can put the, you know, the team on his shoulders and hit, you know, important shots, can really score. Just want to remind everybody, Matt, that this is a call-in show. We still have a few minutes left if anybody wants to call. I know we all want to get to our Easter dinners and everything else on the Bet Online or Bet Online.ag toll-free call lines, 347-215-7771. Matt, are you a betting guy?
I mean, I've made bets before. I try to pick them in a reasonable manner.
Do you know what the money line is when you see the money line on the game?
Yes. Yep.
So the money line on tonight's game was 140. So I guess that means if you bet $100, you get $140 back. The line
was
usually
that's a straight up pick to win. It's not based on the spread or anything like that. You just pick a winner.
Or the over under. And of course, the Boston Celtics, just barely. I don't know if there's a coincidence or not. I'm not Mike Munger, so I won't bring that up. But 3.5 points was the spread, and 205 over and under. So if you bet against the spread and you bet the over and under, and you bet over on the over and under, you probably won yourself some money. You mind hearing this real quick read for betonline.ag that I found, Matt, before we finish up the show?
The read. I didn't think there was a read, Nick.
I have one, though. And it says, BetOnline.ag is more than just an online betting platform. They boast a focus on the player approach and have built their reputation of offering clients nothing but the best, from cutting-edge technology, enticing promotions, and the latest sports betting odds. Arguably their most popular and well-known service, their famous sports book, is where a lot of the magic happens. Here you will find live lines for all major sport events, including the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, soccer, tennis, NASCAR, squash, badminton, cricket, field hockey, high-lie, netball, lacrosse, water polo, kabaddi, motocross, curling, sepak takraw, bocce, even bowling. Do you play the regular bowling or the candlestick pin bowling?
I prefer the 10-pin. It's just the candle pin is too unsatisfying. You know, the pins don't fall down as often.
Right. Well, their live online betting feature allows you to bet your favorites quickly and easily and in real time. Client input is extremely important to them, betonline.ag, so feel free to offer your valuable suggestions to help them give you the best platform for all your sports betting, horse betting, poker, and casino gambling needs. Go to clnsmedia.com/win and put in their code, what is it, CLNS50, to get 50% cash back on your first deposit.
CLNS50. There you go. All right.
Great. So I think we've covered the games coming up, the Milwaukee games coming up.
Well, I just want to kind of predict when the game – not necessarily predict because I don't care whether I'm right on this or not, but I'm guessing that if Milwaukee wins on Monday, you will see game one Friday. I would say Friday in Milwaukee, just because the other series in the East are not done quite yet, and I feel like it'll get kind of staggered that way. But if Milwaukee finds a way to lose a game to Detroit, then I'm guessing the series wouldn't start until Sunday. So, or maybe the league would punish Milwaukee and say, no, you're going to start on Friday anyway. So I'm thinking the Celtics have a good 5 days off here. They can get some rest. You mentioned earlier, rest is real important for Marcus Smart. And I think that especially if Eric Bledsoe actually is playing well and a guy that you need to worry about, I think it's important for him to play in this next series. But I don't think that he puts the Celtics in a terrible position by not playing. So I'm still saying the Celtics, I'd go 60-40. Celtics win this series. They're going to find a way to do it. Honestly, Nick, I think they're going to come out and they're going to win game one, and they're going to win both games at home, and they're going to find a way to win, to finish this thing off in six, because if it comes down to that seventh game in Milwaukee, I'm still not sure if I actually trust the Celtics on that one. So I'm hoping that it turns out that they don't have to go back to Milwaukee for a game seven, and they steal one of the first two, specifically game one, because if they don't steal game one, I feel like it might be tough to steal game two. I don't know. I just feel like their momentum right now, they probably feel good about themselves. Jaylen Brown showing the sweep at the end of the game on the bench. He is looking confident out there. I think that the Celtics are building some momentum here. And while you may say that, oh, they just played Indiana, they don't know what they're getting into, they're going up against Milwaukee, it's the toughest team, blah, blah, blah. Guess what? Milwaukee just played Detroit. So maybe Detroit has the top two players that, when you compare them to Indiana, but their team is nothing special after Blake and Drummond. So Milwaukee didn't get a test here either. If you're going to complain that the Celtics didn't get a test and that they have something strong to go up against, look on the other side too, because if Milwaukee is at all taking the Celtics for granted, they will lose game one. They will. They cannot go into the series thinking that they're going to just beat the Celtics because they're on such a roll this year. Because if they do, the Celtics will catch them by surprise, and they'll be down, and they'll lose home court advantage, and that might be it. That might be all the Celtics need. Honestly, Nick, I think they're setting up for a nice little run here, and that they are going to surprise some people. So put the green goggles on. Get your green sweatsuit out. I know I am, obviously. I'm tooting the horn already. Get all aboard. Get on the train. Here we go.
It's a little bit hot down here for the sweatsuit, the tracksuit. I've already put my joggers away for the spring because it's already in the 80s down here, so I'm not trying to do all that. But I agree with you about game one, and the reason I agree with you is for a slightly different reason. I think winning game two and then holding serve in Boston for games three and four, that requires a three-game winning streak against the best team in the league. I don't know if that's going to happen. I can see winning game one, and winning game one, I think, shortens the series down to six games and avoids the seventh game. I think that's what you get out of that, and I think that I agree with you completely that a seventh game in Milwaukee is not necessarily what you want to see. But it also, winning game one, puts that urgency and that fear into the Milwaukee Bucks and their crowd. There's a lot of, you know, playoff basketball is, you know, a lot of psychological stuff. It's a lot about matchups, a lot about other things than just a one-off game throughout the season. So I think game one, it's not a must-win for the Celtics. I think it can go, you know, two games in Milwaukee, then two games in Boston, and then maybe the Celtics can steal, you know, again, that would require a three-game winning streak, but steal game five, you know, in Milwaukee or something to that effect. I'd like to see this series not go seven games. I just have a feeling that it does, but I think this Boston Celtics is a different Celtics team than we've seen all season. Whether you believe in the switch that's been flipped or whether you believe that this has been a, you know, a building kind of a rising crescendo of where the Boston Celtics, you know, were supposed to be, where we expected them to be. I think they're peaking at the right time regardless, however you want to say it. And I honestly think that minus Victor Oladipo, I think the defensive, you know, challenges that they faced against the Indiana Pacers are a much better warm-up in the playoffs, And you saw Kyrie Irving against that, you know, that fantastic Indiana defense just light them up in a couple of games. And you saw other players light them up in a couple of games. So I think that was a much better warm-up for the Boston Celtics. They'll be much more readily equipped coming into this Eastern Conference semifinal series against the Milwaukee Bucks then vice versa, because the Milwaukee Bucks, the Detroit Pistons are not a fantastic defensive team. As far as I know, Andre Drummond hasn't ever really been the most fantastic defensive big. I know that he's a good rebounder. He does, you know, certain things that, you know, an old school style big does. But, you know, this series just shows it's two completely different things. So if you're looking for a tune-up, I think Indiana was the perfect tune-up for the Boston Celtics in that it wasn't really a threat. Obviously, it was a sweep. But it also gave them, you know, an opportunity to get a look at their lineups, get a look at their matchups, get some of their players, you know, ready and rolling, get Jaylen Brown confident on the bench, making sweeping, you know, histrionics, and, you know, ready to go against the Milwaukee Bucks, because even without Victor Oladipo, the Indiana Pacers still won several games after his injury. I believe he missed 60 games this season or something close to that. And that defense, much better warm-up and gets them much better prepared to deal with a team like the Milwaukee Bucks. Although there's no equivalent to Giannis on the Indiana Pacers, that defense, you know, you still got to score on the defense, and the Boston Celtics did so regularly.
They're still a good team, and winning on the road was something that people were questioning about the Celtics. And even though Indiana did not really put up an enormous fight, they're obviously not better than the Celtics talent-wise. That's still a tough place to play, and the crowd was not into it after a while, but that's because the Celtics played so well and shut them down. So I think that gives them confidence going on the road against Milwaukee as well, which is something that will benefit them greatly. All right, Nick, that's going to do it for us. We'll have to wait and see when the next round starts, but I promise you that we will be back for the second round here on CLNS Media. Unlike the other local coverage around here, we go strong all the way to the end, so you will hear a post-game show after every playoff game for the Boston Celtics until they are either knocked out or win the championship. Those are the two options this year, and we'll have to wait and see how long it lasts, but we're looking just like Kyrie. We got 12 wins left. That's what we're looking for. We're trying to see 12 more Celtics wins this year, so that's it for us here on the CLNS Media Celtics post-game show. For Nick Cicento, My name is Matt Rury, and join us next time, sometime next weekend, when the Celtics take on the Milwaukee Bucks. Thanks for listening, everybody. We are out of here. Go Celtics. Sweep!
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNS Radio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.
Last chance to look at me, actor.